retail has always been a viable asset class, and I think more so than ever coming out of COVID, it's actually performed exceptionally well.
Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So can you describe, Brookfield's a very large organization. Can you give the listeners a general structure of Brookfield and where your specific group fits into that structure?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, Brookfield is a big company and continues to grow globally. And so at the very basic level, right, Brookfield Asset Management is an alternative investment manager. And by that, I mean, they're investing in lots of different types of things outside of bonds and stocks, right? Brookfield Asset Management as a parent company is basically fundraising through both private and public markets, and then using some of their own funds along with their co-investors to deploy capital to either existing operating platforms or new ones and acquiring new investments. And so those operating platforms vary. Real estate has been the biggest historically and continues to be. However, there's also infrastructure, there's private equity, we now have credit, we now have renewable energy. And so these all exist in different investment profiles with different operating platforms, different professionals, all reporting back up to Brookfield Asset Management in New York and Toronto.
Okay. And your group specifically focuses on the retail side, correct?
That's right. Yep. Which is based here in Chicago. It, you know, most of the portfolio is derived from what was GGP, General Growth Properties, which Brookfield recapitalized in 2010. And then from 2010 to 2018, Brookfield had about a 30% or so interest in GGP before acquiring the outstanding shares in 2018 to take it private.
Okay. So it's fair to say you guys cover a huge geography, you have scale, and you see a lot relative to retail.
Yeah, I mean, globally, we have probably 160 plus assets in retail alone. Here in the United States, we probably have about 130. So 130 of the 160 are here in the US, which is what we are responsible for.
Okay. So I thought office was an interesting place to be during COVID, the way everyone was not returning to work and then returning to work and dealing with it. Retail's been a whole different ballgame. There's been some winners, there's been some losers. So, you know, what sectors of retail are doing well, which are not, and what are the considerations around those?
Sure. Well, I think, like, first of all, I think retail generally has gotten a bad rap in the past, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, right? It was the death of the mall and, you know, consumers are changing their habits and technology and COVID hit. And so I think just to level set, I think, you know, retail has always been a viable asset class. And I think more so than ever coming out of COVID, it's actually performed exceptionally well. And, you know, with COVID and post-COVID, especially post-COVID, there really isn't one area that's been an underperformer or overperformer. I think you've seen retail excel over the past couple of years. I think, you know, over 19, year to date this year, we're up like 37%, you know, in totality across all different sales categories. Certainly, you know, you're hearing about consumer spending and inflation and whatnot, which everybody's familiar with. It's moderating, right? So if you're going back to 21, 22, people had, you know, a ton of savings after COVID. They were spending money. They continue to do so, but I think you're starting to see a shift a little bit where people are spending money, right? They're focusing on entertainment and services, less so on discretionary spending around apparel and splurges and things like that. But those still continue to comp positively. Luxury had a huge run, still is growing. Sales to date are still growing in general. So I think you're starting to see, though, a shift towards services and restaurants. Furniture had a huge boom during COVID and right after COVID. People were at home, they were investing in their houses. That's slowed. It's moderated for sure. Jewelry is moderated, but I think across the board, you still see comps that are positive comps year over year.
Okay. And were you saying that the high-end retailers are still doing well right now?
They're still doing well, but it's slowed, right? I think I think everyone was buying luxury in 21, 22. And now I think you started to see it moderate a bit to call it, you know, I think everybody wants to shop high and shop low. And then you've got the consumer who might be shopping luxury all the time. They're less price sensitive. They'll always be shopping luxury. So what we're seeing, though, is the more sensitive consumers pulling back, and they're focused on value, they're focused on services, on experiences, but they're also still spending. So it's a little bit of a tale of two different sides of the story.
Okay. So with your larger malls, you've got a variety of retailers and experiences and such. How has that put together and managed to drive the shopping experience, to drive revenue for to drive revenue for everyone. I mean, there's obviously a science and there's data behind it, but how are those managed ongoing in figuring out which retailers to bring in to fill in the big boxes, let's say, that go away? Yeah. And the overall kind of, you know, origami of it all.
Yeah. I mean, merchandising is complex. It's a bit of an art, right? Like, I mean, you look at a lot of different real estate classes and there's a lot of data, a lot of science, and it is what it is. Say it's easy, but it is what it is. I think with retail, you got science, you got data, but you've got a lot of, you know, a lot of just overall psychology around what goes into it. How does, what does the mall want to be? Where is it at? What does the consumer want? And how do they want to shop it? And so you merchandise it, you know, to the consumer to make it the most productive it can be, right? So it all comes down to sales. But the one data point is sales. And how do you generate more sales? If you've got more sales, you'll generate more rent, right? So that's the bottom line. And so you'll look at the different wings and focus on, is this wing for juniors? And if it's for juniors, you know, high schooler is not going to be shopping at Gucci next to, you know, an American Eagle. So you merchandise it accordingly, right? We'll have a wing of, call it more junior oriented focus. You'll have a wing of aspirational luxury. You'll have your restaurants and locations that are tougher in general, or, you know, call it more of a beacon in terms of just destination worthy, you know, locations.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the, you know, I consider myself, obviously I'm a consumer, but when I walk through a mall, I don't think about the psychology around it, but I know there's a lot that goes in to figure out how, you know, I'm going to walk through a mall versus my wife versus the kids.
Right.
And, you know, are most of the malls that you guys are involved with, are they, you know, what is the consumer makeup that you go after?
I mean, it varies, right? So if you went through our portfolio of 130 assets, most of them are regional malls. We have some high street as well, and Michigan Avenue and Fifth Avenue. Miami Design District, we have an ownership interest in. But it depends. Like, we've got some, you know, some of the top 10 malls in the country, Oak Brook Center, Ala Moana Center, Tyson's in DC area. Then we have other malls that are, you know, your traditional B malls, bread and butter types of tenants that everybody here would know that do well. And you know, more than that, even, I think they're community centers, right? I mean, the community, they're employed there. It generates tax revenue. There's events that we throw that are bringing people together. And so from that perspective, it's very important. It's really the economic center of some of these towns, the fabric of it.
Mm-hmm. So switching gears a little bit to the psychology of the shopper, what's changed and what, you know, the different generations, for example, let's start with Gen Z, what are they looking for in a shopping experience and how are you tailoring your product to them?
I asked one of my Gen Z coworkers how they could shop, and he said his girlfriend does it for him. So some things don't change, maybe.
Yeah, right.
No, but I, in all seriousness, no, I think though it's a relevant question and something that we're always looking at and making sure we're evolving, right? Because retail's all, every industry is evolving. And so for us, we want to be part of that. We want to help retailers. We want to help consumers, you know, make it easy for them. But no, Gen Z, like, I think a couple of things. One is, you know, when they were growing up, when they were younger, some of their first experiences around finance was during the great, you know, recession that we've had in 2009, 2010. So they're budget focused, right? They want something that makes sense, but they'll still shop high-low. They'll look at their specialty stuff. They'll mix in some of the value with, you know, call it more boutique style shopping. A lot of those they'll find and discover online, right? So they'll do a lot of research and discovery through social media channels. And I'm sure, you know, if you're a shopper at all, you'll see that stuff pop up. You never heard of this brand before. Before you know it, those brands will open up stores. And so something we're focused on too is helping connect those stores, those concepts that don't know how to operate physically, you know, in a physical location into a, how does this work, right? How do you do this? And so we're focused on that. But I think, you know, they want things that are value focused, but they'll shop high at the same time selectively. They want things fast, right? So I think we all know, like, you know, if you order something online, how fast can you get it? And surprisingly, though, because of that, they like to shop in stores, right? What's the benefit of going to a store? You can walk away with something.
So are they shopping online first and then going to buy it in the store? Or what's the...
I think it depends on, if, like, you know, obviously things that are more experiential, more high touch, more expensive, you want to go and experience it, right? You want to see it, touch it first. Stuff that's more commodity, you know, you'll buy online. You'll get it delivered and no rush. I'll get it when I get it. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. But I think the key word is experiences, right? So if you're walking into a store, that brand has to be able to showcase what it's about, right? And it's about its product, but it's also about a greater idea that has to resonate with the consumer, which could be sustainability, it could be social causes, right? And so that's a big trend too.
Okay. We have a special guest here, Christine Torres, your colleague.
People. Yes.
Hi, Christine. Can you put the mic up a little?
Oh, yes.
Thank you. And Christine, you're involved in the office side of the malls, which is an interesting intersection, right?
That's correct.
This is the Office Space podcast, so I'd be remiss not to have you talk about that. Can you talk about the experience and what you're dealing with you know, office space within a mall?
Sure.
And what that kind of play is between the office and the retail?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's an interesting time, especially after COVID, with respect to office, right? Like you mentioned, in various markets throughout the country, there's a hard, it's a difficult time to get returned to office. And I think there's a really dramatic shift between what were the historical classical uses of some of these sites. For the retail portfolio, we have roughly, call it 21 markets that have retail within the, or I'm sorry, office within the retail footprint. That varies between B2C, smaller, more boutique, you know, traditional office users. A lot of medical takes place in that because of the synergies in retail. And we were often taking a look at alternative uses similar to life sciences, similar to, say, you know, other experiential components like a flex or a co-working space and how that would act or react to the offering within a retail setting. So it certainly has taken on a little bit more of a role with respect to how can we heighten the mixed use component of a retail center and drive the highest and best use.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of value there, right? Because, I mean, what do tenants want? They want 24/7. They, you know, not necessarily the mall is going to be open 24 hours, but they want the amenities right there. They want parking, accessibility. I mean, it really has a lot. To that point, though, a lot of the product is somewhat dated,
right?
If you're looking at medical office, it's typically kind of dated mostly. And so is Brookfield investing in upgrading that, or is it they want to see the demand first?
It definitely comes in a case-by-case situation. And it's definitely market-driven. Okay. In areas where the retail is really successful and booming and there's good foot traffic, there is normally a use case for having some kind of office component, generally on the medical side. We've seen that really in DC. We see that in a lot of Northeast markets, as well as really the like Miami or South Florida market as well, where you do kind of want various uses for your consumer, your clientele to be able to take advantage of. So we do see that come up frequently.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's a benefit too to have a lot of different verticals under one real estate, you know, ownership, right? And so we have every kind of asset class you can think of. And, you know, one thing we're trying to always do is tie strategies together, right? So we're a mall company, right? And so we have land where it might be viable to build office or multifamily or a hotel. And so we have the ability to bring in, you know, like Christine and the developers from our office side to look at things. And that's what we're trying to do is drive more long-term viability across these asset classes. And by the way, the same can be said for our standalone office buildings, right? Like in New York and in LA and whatnot, where we're always trying to think through, and they're tapping into our knowledge of, hey, what's the retail strategy that works best? And in that case, it's a little bit of a different model, right? Like malls, you want to merchandise and drive productivity. And the bottom line, you still want to do that for an office building, of course. But if you're willing to give a little bit sometimes on your retail to bring in the best-in-class restaurateur, then all of a sudden you're getting a lot of exposure. People want to be at the building. They've got a place to dine. And you're not commodity anymore. You're doing something where you're driving demand and you're driving your rents upstairs and the velocity too at which you're leasing space.
Right. Yeah, there's a synergy between all those. And I imagine there's a challenge. As big as you are, there's some great opportunities, but also someone has to orchestrate all the parties coming together, right?
Yeah,
figure that out. That's probably not easy for as big as organization that you are.
No, but I think the challenge and the goal is how do you decentralize decision-making, right? Letting the platforms know you can make decisions even within its own platform, within a certain threshold. But, you know, if you're going to start looking at multifamily, you need, like, let the multifamily experts weigh in, right? And so to me, I always think about decentralizing decision-making, but centralizing information and awareness, right? That means challenging. I think we've gotten a lot better at it. And I think, look, it's a collaborative company. So we're always checking those boxes and exploring different opportunities.
Great. Mm-hmm. Opportunities. Where do you see, you're always raising money. Where do you see opportunities in the coming months, years? Are there distressed assets that going to be popping up more? Where are those geographically? Are there certain areas where you all are focused?
Yeah, good question. I think, look, I think across all of our verticals, we're always fundraising, right? And so we're fundraising now. We're looking to deploy capital where it makes sense, right? So I don't think there's any one asset class that we say, okay, yes, let's go focus on this. I think, you know, there's certain ones that are having outsized demand right now, right? Think about logistics, the warehousing, you think about data centers, the AI, you know, all of a sudden emerging and exploding, and those, you know, all that requires a lot of computing power. But to your point, there's just more fundamental, you know, stuff that we're all away, like office, multifamily, hotel, right? That are facing higher interest rate environments now. And so if their loans are coming up, they're going to have to figure out how to get recapitalized. And there's a lot of ways you can do that, right? There's a ton of different ways you can recapitalize a property. And so that, and I think there's a great opportunity coming up in the next couple of years to do that. And so we'll see. I don't think it's been called fully started yet in terms of just having those initiatives get going. But I feel like in the next year or two, there's probably a lot of opportunity.
Urban or suburban or?
Probably both, right? Probably both. Okay. I think if you think about like downtowns though, right? I think there's maybe arguably, you know, a bigger opportunity because people have been working from home and, you know, certain, think about like the high streets of regular neighborhoods are doing really well. Think about Southport in Chicago or Williamsburg in Brooklyn, right? People are spending more time near their homes. So from a retail mixed use perspective, that's been thriving. And the downtowns have been a little bit, you know, dragging and suffering a bit. But I think that'll be cyclical. That'll come back, you know, and there'll be value there as well to pick up along the way.
Okay. I mean, you talked about Southport and in some of these, you know, urban places. You know, I was just last night, I think it was, a few businesses on Southport got broken into. Hmm. Your malls have, people have driven cars into, yes, Apple stores in Naperville. Yeah. And like, yeah, no one is immune to the ridiculousness that's going on right now. How important is that for you all to address from a security standpoint? Does it move the needle from an economic standpoint, or is it more a distraction?
No, I mean, it's a multitude of things, right? And we're very focused on security, right? It's something we take seriously. We have really great experts in-house with a lot of experience that work on this stuff. And there's a lot of different angles to this, right? There's crime in the malls that can happen. We have, you know, obviously security, and we're always looking at staffing. Do we need to add more staff? Do we need to add less staff? There's a lot of technology that we're deploying, you know, and like one example, like license plate readers that tie directly into the local police department, that if you want to come to the mall, your license plate gets scanned. And it's, for most people, it means nothing. But if you've stolen a car and that car has been reported, the police are getting an alert, right? And I think even as importantly, if your intention is to come to an asset and do something, you'll see that we have those, and, you know, you might be deterred from doing something bad. So it's a huge focus. Retailers care, consumers care, because if something happens at a mall, you may not want to go to the mall, you know, or for some period of time. So it has a big effect and definitely impacts the mall in the short term. So we're very focused on it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it seems like you're very focused on it. The municipalities and the governments need to help, right?
I mean,
at the end of the day, there needs to be more support in that regards.
Absolutely.
So there's only so much you can do on your own. So what are your predictions for retail? And Christine, from an office quasi-retail standpoint, you can chime in here as well. What are your predictions if we're looking at, let's say, the next year? And then I want to hear the next 3 years, next 5 years. Now, I will preface it. People ask me this all the time. I can really look out a year. And then beyond that, it's like, I don't know. Is there another COVID? Is there another, you know, economic recession? I don't really know. But I'm going to ask you the question and I want an answer.
Look, physical retail is not going anywhere, right? I think it's proven, right? And it's been through, you name it, all the things I just mentioned, technology, online shopping, COVID. So, you know, and we've seen huge sales growth. So I think like for the next year, we expect moderated growth, but we still expect growth. And so maybe that growth is more in line with historical averages, but that's coming off of huge, tremendous growth over the past few years where we're far surpassing pre-COVID numbers. You know, and going out in time, I think that's, you know, who knows? But I think that the one thing that's for sure is I think there's been investors are looking at retail now going, huh, that same comment I just made, they're saying it's still here and it's doing really, really well. And maybe I was a little bit hesitant, you know, before COVID, during COVID, and after COVID. But now if I have that money to allocate, where do I want to put it? You know, so I think, you know, if you read some of the reports around where cap rates going, there was only one asset class that they predicted unchanged. Everything else is going up a little bit. The prediction around malls was flat because retail is crushing it. So I think there'll be a renewed interest, I think, from investors. I think retailers realize they need it for their omnichannel strategies, right? There's only so much online sales penetration you can get before you need to open up a store to have more exposure, you know, offers logistic opportunities and just more awareness. So I think malls will be here, right? I think retail will be here. I don't think you'll see much more construction of new retail unless it's an amenity in another mixed-use building. But I think it's promising. I think it'll continue to grow and in the long run will be a viable asset class still.
Okay. Yeah, and to that point, the retail on the office side at least, like retail also is a huge amenity and really a driver for office leasing or office foot traffic and really telling the story of return to office as well. So on the office front, it's the same story with respect to, again, like what are the offerings and what's the kind of mixed use opportunity that's at this particular asset or at this particular property. And we see it in different investments. For instance, we invested in the Avid Music Exchange, which is in Charlotte, one of a Music Factory properties, which Live Nation is our, you know, main event planner and has a large lease from an office standpoint there. But also we have additional office space there where there's co-working, there's more smaller B2C users there, which you wouldn't necessarily expect. And there's, you know, restaurants and other retail in that center. And so I think where you see a lot of the positive growth or area for opportunity over the next, call it 3 years, is in leveraging kind of the different uses as opposed to what historically has always been there. Obviously, that's a big story along LaSalle in Chicago. It's a big story in areas like Portland or San Francisco that were really thriving, which, like Mark said, are really cyclical, and you can see that all coming back, but it's not going to look the same like it did 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. I'm looking forward to see, because there's what the media has put out there, where kind of retail is in office, and feel like we've been kicked around so much.
Right.
But the reality is it's not as bad. And in the case of retail, I mean, it's quite good in a lot of cases in your asset. So that's encouraging to hear.
Yeah, many cases. Yeah, for sure. And I think, look, there are assets out there that are, call it the losing end of the consolidation of the market for retail, right? But those have viable futures as well, because you have, you know, like Northbrook Court, where we're reinvesting in, call it a new mixed use idea that, look, it's a long-term plan, but it'll, you know, it's the highest and best use going forward that'll still generate jobs and tax dollars and property taxes, right? So for us, it's a win, just a matter of time and evolving those assets into what they want to be.
Yeah. And getting community groups to agree. That takes a lot of time for you guys to bring everyone together, right?
For sure.
Well, great. This has been wonderful. I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
And thanks for coming.
Excellent.
Thanks for having us.